Welcome to the Kids with Big Emotions podcast. I'm your host, Andy Clark. And today we have a guest who, oh man, I don't know when I met Josh, but I do know the very first time that I met him, I was like, man, this guy has a gift. He has this gift to, he hears what he sees the superpowers in people. He sees he's able to pull things out of people in a way that, and kids especially, so that they can see themselves in a way that they don't normally see themselves and give them this strength and courage and, oh man, just this feeling that I can do this and I can be successful and helps them with the steps to get to where they are. And I knew this about him, but I didn't know what he did. And now what Josh does, which we're going to go through Josh, a little bit of Josh's history, because he was a lawyer. And Josh, you can correct me on any of this. So Josh Aronovich was a lawyer. I think you've been a lot of poli you've been in politics as well at certain levels. You're in a lot of the boards and stuff in your city. You're very involved in all of that. And what you do now is your passion, which is helping kids with their SATs. And you're brilliant at it, getting these kids marks way higher in SATs. But you also help them even while they're younger and while they're in college after they've gone through the SATs and gotten to the college of their dreams. You help them navigate it so that they feel empowered and that they know what direction they want to go in and they can make these decisions and just feel good about themselves. So, just if you didn't get this, anybody that's listening, I'm just was super excited. I was like, Josh, I need you on this podcast. So, Josh Aronovich, just thank you so much for being with us here today.
It's an absolute honor to be here, and I'm excited to see where this conversation goes.
Right. I mean, I know this is going to be completely organic. I didn't plan because you and I always go down a rabbit hole and we'll just see where this goes. So where do we even begin? Let's start with what you do currently, which is the SATs. And then I do want to make sure that we do touch on today what you do outside of the SATs with these kids as well. But let's start with SATs. So I don't even know what questions to start asking you about SATs. So what should I be asking you right now?
So I guess the first and crucial question when it comes to the SATs is, do they matter? And there's so much conflicting and confusing information out there about how much the SATs matter. And even before COVID, but especially during the height of the pandemic, a lot of colleges shifted from being SAT required to being SAT optional. But test optional doesn't always mean what people think and hope it means. Test optional means you don't need to have test scores to apply, but it doesn't always mean you don't need them to get in. And there's a ton of differences between colleges and even between different admissions readers at the same colleges. I think there is, among some people, an honest effort to reduce the importance of standardized tests so we can see the full student. But there's also a very strong strain of, you have two students. One got an A in chemistry, one got a B in chemistry. They go to the same school, but they have different teachers. And one teacher might be a harder teacher than the other teacher. And that's the same class in the same school in the same state. When you're talking about kids in different states, different curricula, different teachers, different programs, different classes, comparing GPAs isn't comparing apples to apples. It's not even apples to oranges. It's more like wrenches to bananas, two things that have absolutely nothing to do with each other. So the SATs, for all its flaws, it still lets you compare students on the same scale. And a lot of schools, when they shifted away from requiring the tests, and the University of Texas had a real look at the data, and they found that students who did not submit SAT scores had substantially lower GPAs in their first year of college. And a lot of colleges have moved back to test required, or even if they're test optional really means we want more students, we want better students, we want to be more selective. So if we go test optional, the people with crappy scores won't submit them. So our average scores will go up. Most people who don't submit them, unless they're absolutely off the charts spectacular in other ways, we're not going to accept. We're just going to assume they had bad scores. Now, I want to be absolutely clear, this is not the case at every school. I have an amazing student who just got into Williams College, which is one of the top of the broad schools in the countries, without submitting scores. But she's also someone who is an absolutely incredible human being, who has accomplished so much and showed so much of herself in her essays. Not all schools will see that without the test scores to back it up. So the SAT, for all its faults, becomes an opportunity. Even kids that struggle with standardized tests, it's not because they can't do it. It's because they've never been taught how to do it in a way that builds on their strengths and allows them to understand how they think, how they process. So much of the SAT isn't just about the substance of it or the strategy. It's about the psychological aspect of managing the experience of taking the test, using breath, being aware of one's mental state as they do the test, being able to sort of almost step out of their own experience and observe what they're thinking and feeling, and realize they're not their thoughts and feelings, they're the one that thinks and feels. And helping kids develop that superpower of awareness, of kindness with themselves, of being able to fully feel their feelings but not be limited by them, is such a huge part of what I do. Because yes, I help people get ridiculously high scores in the SATs. And sometimes that means going from good to great. Sometimes that means a kid like one of my favorite clients who really taught me patience. So I offer free repeats in my SAT program. Kids who go to my group classes can come back as many times as they want or need to, as long as they need to get the results they want. So that's why a lot of folks start early, sometimes is eighth or ninth grade. This one young woman who had this childlike wonder the way she looked at the world, but she struggled academically. It just took her longer to get things. She came to my class every week for 2 years, and she ended up going up from a 720 to an 1190.
What? A 720?
Yeah, 720 out of 1600 to an 1190. So a 470 point increase. She got into the college of her dreams where she's thriving, but it took her a long time and a lot of frustration and a lot of meeting herself where she was and not taking no for an answer from the universe. So the SATs really are a context and an excuse for me to teach kids how to learn to love themselves, to love their strengths, to recognize their superpowers, and to intentionally grow into the version of themselves they want to be. Because so much of our personality, so much of our predispositions, so much of what we start with is only a starting point. And we get to decide what we build with it, what we make of it.
And see, this is why I said this is your superpower, right? Yes, you do SATs, but oh man, you bring out the thing that the kids get at the end of being with you is this sense of who they are, the sense of confidence in themselves, this sense of being able to work through hard things. Those are the life skills that are going to take them everywhere that you Absolutely. Can sit. And this is where I struggle a lot with the schools and the way that things are, is that they're pushing a lot the academic, 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 and not necessarily this other side of the tools and the skills that are actually going to, once they develop those skills, then academically they can learn and push themselves better and more and in other things in life.
Funny analogy that just popped into my head. Mm-hmm. We were talking before the official call started about my yoga journey.
Yeah.
But in yoga, the asana practice, the postures, the shapes is just 1/8 of what yoga is. The academics is like 1/8 of what learning is.
Yes.
And the more we can encourage our kids, regardless of how they school or unschool or homeschool or what have you, to embrace all the different aspects of learning. Learning who they are, learning their place in the world, learning the impact they want to have on the world, learning how to really listen to other people, not just with their ears, but with their whole souls. All of this is just as important, if not more so, than the math skills, the reading skills. Those are all tools to deepen our experience of ourselves in the world. And recognizing that everyone puts those pieces together differently, everyone has a different journey. There is no right way or wrong way to do it. It's just doing it in a way that's authentic to who you are and who you want to be.
And that's, I think, when I started homeschooling, there's this mental shift. Like you have to, because there's so many parents that are questioning, well, are they following the curriculum? Are they doing this? And it's only about the academics. It's only the academics. And I'm like, oh my gosh, there's so much more that we're doing. We're teaching them to find questions to things that they're finding. We're teaching them to doing things, just even doing their laundry and the housework around all of their stuff. Like those are simple things, not the mental things, but they're a piece to their life when they go to college, to being able to get their own food, get their groceries, do their laundry, clean the house in between their schoolwork, like simple things like that.
Yeah.
And then, but also all the mentals, all the struggles they're having. Okay, are we having a tough day? How do we work through this? How do we get through this? Do we push that work aside for today while we're working on this skill? Because I know that once we build this skill, then they're going to be able to make more headway in the actual academics. And that has been such a mental shift for me, and not judging myself and being like, well, they didn't get all their math done today, or they didn't get all their science or whatever, the academic done today. I'm like, and I have to stop and think, but we worked at these skills.
Yeah.
We're working on the perfectionism and being okay that it's okay to make mistakes and to be able to step away when you need to take that break or refuel yourself or fill your bucket, however it is that your bucket needs to get filled. And to also figure out how to get inspiration, because I did find as well when I took my kids out that they both didn't really know what they liked to do, because in school they were told what they had to do. And so it's been us, if they talk about something, I'm like, let's go and research that now a bit. And we're researching it more for them to start even figuring out what they have an interest in and doing.
It's so easy to get confused between things we're good at and things we love.
Yes.
Because we love the way people react when we're good at something. We love the praise we get. We love how it feels to be successful. But just because we're good at something doesn't mean it gives us joy in and of itself. And learning to listen to those sparks of curiosity, to realize we don't have to be good at something to love it. That it's not about performing, it's about experiencing. It's about exploring. And that taking more of an approach of play to all aspects of learning is so crucial, whether it's homeschool or whether it's traditional education. Just because we're given an assignment doesn't determine the way we approach that assignment. And we can find ways to approach an assignment to create space for joy and play and exploration. No matter what it is we're asked to do, we can do it in a way that brings our own special sparkle to it. And that's, I think, one of the most important things we can teach our kids, to not just take what's given, but to take what's given, pass it through the filters of their joy, their experience, their passion, and find a way to use the opportunity to do that task in a way that actually serves them and serves their growth. That the teacher is a guide, an aid, a facilitator, but they're not the one in charge of the education.
Mm-hmm.
The kid is.
Yeah, absolutely. All right. So how do you help? This is such a loaded question. I know you can't answer the whole thing, but so say a child does come to you and they really struggle with writing tests.
Mm-hmm.
And I know that the reasons I know, because with me working with kids too, the reasons why they're struggling with tests is like so vast. So this isn't really a fair question per se, but how do you help them?
So first thing I do is I have them take a test. And we sit down and we look at, okay, what did you get wrong? What was your thought process? Why did you get that wrong? And we can use the individual questions where they made errors or mistakes, or I just had no idea what they were doing. Or we can see that they tended to get answers wrong in clumps, which tells me that they don't like getting things wrong. And when they're on a question and it's just not working, they get increasingly frustrated. And when they get increasingly frustrated, they eventually give up and throw up their hands and go on to the next question, but the psychological damage is already done at that point. And then they're taking that negative energy into the next question. They get that wrong too. And eventually, after getting too many wrong in a row, they just shut down. And it's this negative death, this downward death spiral, I call it. So the solution to that part is, when you're on a question and it's not quick and easy, if it's not working immediately, get off the frickin' train. You're not only on the wrong track, you're on the wrong freaking train. Either it's hard, you don't know how to do it, and it doesn't matter how long you bang your head against the wall, you're just going to give yourself a migraine. Or it's easy and you misread something. You missed the big, bold, capital except, or the not in the question, or whatever. You flipped a minus sign on a math problem. But when you keep banging your head against the same problem after misreading it. You're just going to calcify that way of misreading it so you can't even read it any other way. So you're not only on the wrong track, you're on the wrong freaking train. Get off the freaking train. Not after you've struggled for 3 or 4 minutes, but literally 5 to 10 seconds in, you know if a question's kicking your ass. That is when you skip. That is when you move on. That is when you buy Felicia and you laugh, you smile, and you get the next 5 questions right because you never got stuck. You never got frustrated. You took the test on your terms, not theirs. So that's one example of sort of taking your power back in the test-taking experience. The other is encouraging kids to look at a test not as a judgment, not as a final thing, but as an opportunity for feedback and a tool for learning. I tell my kids all the time, the important thing about a practice test is not what you get on it. It's what you get out of it. It's what you learn from it. Every question we get wrong is there to teach us something. So we can learn, we can grow, and we can resolve never to make the same mistake again. And that's how we get better. That's how we improve. We take each mistake as a building block for the version of ourselves that's going to totally own this thing. And sometimes it's substance, sometimes it's just stuff they don't know. And it's teaching kids that intelligence and knowledge are not the same thing. Knowledge is just the stuff you know. And there may be stuff you don't know, or you learned and forgot through no fault of your own. That doesn't mean you're not intelligent. The intelligence is what you do with the knowledge you have. We can fill gaps of knowledge, but most kids are way more intelligent than they give themselves credit for. It's just helping them to fill the gaps in the knowledge so they can show that more effectively. Sometimes it's emotional regulation. Sometimes it's focusing on breath. It's on reframing the story they tell themselves. There was a fascinating study years ago where they measured the biochemistry of folks with crippling anxiety and of elite performance athletes that were going to break world records. And they found that the biochemistry was identical. Crippling anxiety and excitement before you break a world record is the same phenomenon. The difference is the story we tell ourselves about the sensations. So let's learn ourselves and for our kids to teach them to choose a story that empowers them rather than taking that power away. So those are some of the examples. And some of it is just they overcomplicate it. Sometimes they go in with an attitude of, oh my God, this test is going to be hard. And that becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy. So they're not even able to see how simple it is because they're expecting a greater level of difficulty and complexity. So much of what I do is just teaching them to let it be easy when it's easy.
So, oh my gosh, so much in what you just said. And I do have a couple of questions just into what you did just talk about as well. Those you didn't mention anything about like the studying and the studying and learning of the academics. That was all the mental side of thing of solely just taking a test and had nothing to do with the academics at that point. And that is where too, like, it just shows how much of the mental goes into this. And I'm guessing, solely guessing, that when you work on that, then the studying itself starts to become easier as well. And then you can start working on the gaps in the struggles that they're having with the studying piece.
For sure. And when they see a question, like, I have no idea how to approach that. I'm like, okay, let's dive in. Let's talk about not only what you do, but why you do that, how you know to do that, how you read these 10 words and know that that's what you're supposed to do next. Other ways they'll test the same thing. So they learn to think about the test, what they test, why they test, how they test. Because that familiarity, that understanding, that depth. So many kids, especially ones that are really smart and struggle with math, it's because the way math is taught doesn't give them enough of the pieces of the puzzle to understand what's going on. Teachers, well-intentioned, sort of dumb it down and simplify it, but that actually makes it harder for these kids. Because if they don't understand why they're doing something, they're not going to remember the steps. So part of what I do in teaching is I break down the why they're doing it, where it comes from, why they're using this formula. Because that way, even if they forget the formula, they understand it well enough to derive it when they need it. It's about deep understanding, not about memorization. Oh, especially kids with high anxiety, even if they memorize it, they're going to be anxious about whether they memorized it right, and they're going to flip it at the last minute because they're doubting themselves.
Right? Self-doubt is huge. And I just had an aha moment, which is fascinating, is that I realized that you're teaching them how to understand how to write a test, which we are all just expected to know how intuitively. I can't believe I've never realized this in my life, right? You'd think that, oh, just because they know the information, they should know how to write the test.
But they don't.
So
There's
essentially,
a black box in between what you know and your ability to demonstrate what you know under certain constraints. And instead of making that path in between as hard and complicated as possible, we should be making it easier by helping kids develop the skills to effectively show what they know. But the reason we don't is think about like an actually objectively hard math problem from like a high-level math class. It could take 20 minutes to solve. Hell, there's some that take years to solve, different proofs and things. The SAT and other standardized tests, by their very structure, don't have enough time and space for those legitimately hard questions. So what do they do instead? They give you questions that look way harder than they are. Because if everything was obviously easy, then everybody would get a perfect score and the test would be useless to differentiate between smart people. So they use within the constraints of the test to try to get a spread of scores so colleges have an excuse to accept some people, not others.
Interesting. That's so fascinating. And I know for me, like I felt so stupid in school because I struggled with multiple choice tests because I was like, I would trip myself up with all the words. And as you said, going back to second guessing what I knew and all that. Meanwhile, like you asked me any of the information and like I have this memory that can regurgitate almost everything out that I've learned and read. Like I listen to audiobooks and I can tell you all the neuroscience and all these different things going on,
But
but I
then when
can't
they
remember.
test it in a way that is a little bit different, that it's
Yes.
using different words to say the same thing, but you're like, but does that really mean that, or maybe it means that? And you
Yes.
start to go beyond the surface level of the meaning and trip yourself up because you're going too deep, too complicated, too many layers. Whereas sometimes it's shutting off that part of our brain taking tests and let it be just mean exactly what it means, precision, no more, no less. And then breaking the text into smaller pieces. Because when we read like 30, 40 words at once, we can get a basic gist, but we miss that level of precision and detail. So it's teaching the kids to read 4 or 5 words at a time and then stop and do something with them. Process them, repeat them back in your own words, argue with them, even mock and make fun of them. Hate reading is a thing, and it's sometimes fun. But the idea is read actively, not passively. So you're actually processing and making meaning of what's in front of you. And that's a skill that oftentimes people assume the kids have, but they don't.
Absolutely. No, my mind's just blown away. I'm thinking of how well I would have done in school, how much better I would have, like high school, I had almost all A's, but there was one class that I absolutely failed because I couldn't do the tests. And I'm like, how can I not do the test? Because it's stuff that I study and research and do now. It's a passion of mine, the stuff I love to do. I'm like, how could I not have done that in high school?
Well, that's exactly why.
Yeah.
Because you cared so much about it and were so interested in it, you were operating at 10 levels too deep.
Yeah. Oh, everything's too deep for me. That's hilarious. And that is, I love to dive so deep into things that maybe tests are just too surface for what I was
It's a
making
form of
marketing.
code switching.
Yeah.
It's where like immigrants learn to speak with different dialects in different settings. It's being able to turn on and off that switch of the level of depth that we're operating at, depending on the result we're trying to get and the audience we're trying to communicate with.
So interesting. So interesting. Okay. So I now have an even better grasp on how amazing you are working with these kids on these SATs. So before we move on to how you help these kids even discover what they want to do, what schools they want to get into, and how you help them in college, is there anything else that I'm missing on SATs that we haven't covered that parents need to know?
Well, I think one is that it's not just SATs.
Yes.
SATs are one example of the kinds of standardized tests that kids have to deal with. But there's also standardized tests to get into gifted and talented programs. There's standardized tests to get into private high schools. There's standardized tests for law school, the LSAT, for the MCAT, for med school, the GMAT for business school, the GRE for what I jokingly call generic grad school. So I work with kids with all of these. Because it's not about teaching the test. It's about teaching the kid. And it's about understanding how they think, how they learn, and helping them to understand how they think and how they learn in the context of that test. So a big chunk of what I do is SATs and LSATs and GREs, but really any kind of standardized test or even subject area tutoring. Like I have a client that I'm actually starting with this week to help with honors chemistry because he has a teacher that he's just not clicking with. And I said to the mom, look, I'm not an expert in chemistry. I'm going to have to brush up on some of this stuff. But I think in so many ways that makes me more effective. Not being an expert in something, I can understand why he doesn't understand at a deeper level. And I can model how to learn in learning alongside him.
Yeah.
And I've had clients in AP Calc that I've done that with when that was not at all my best subject. I have a client who is a fourth year surgical resident where I'm helping him prepare for his boards. So it's all different ways of approaching learning in a person-centered way. And I don't need to be an expert in the topic to help teach people how to learn it.
That makes so much sense. So much sense. I want to go to you. Okay. So, I mean, I'm always loving all our conversations. So like, yeah, this is amazing. And I'm thinking of my kids now too, because I was there. Well, one is going to be in grade 9. And what you just said about that girl being in the courses throughout the years to be helping her, like, that is my biggest thing of if my son does go back to actual high school from homeschooling, it is going to be that struggle with understanding how to get into the testing that I'm
right.
Definitely going to be asking about your group program and stuff too.
Also, you say you want to go to me. The funny thing is that even though my passion and the bulk of what I do is working with teens and young adults, I do have clients of all ages. And I'm working with a friend of mine, Jess, right now. We're putting together a retreat for the overgivers, the adults who are always making sure that everyone else in their life is taken care of and is safe and is okay, but too often don't pour into themselves the way they need to. So we're currently sort of designing and figuring out what that's going to look like.
Am I your model client on that?
Yeah, absolutely. But it's going to be in July, probably the second weekend in July we're looking at.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I already have a list of things you're going to be sending me. So you'll send me that as well.
Definitely.
Is that information on your website or is that something that's
not yet? That's in the sort of early planning stages. We're looking at venues right now, trying to figure out where and when, but that hopefully will be coming out in the next few weeks.
Okay. All right. But that will eventually.
Yeah, so by the time this airs.
Yeah. Because this is airing in June.
Yep.
The start of June or end of May. I think we talked about that at the beginning of June. Okay. So, all right. So that is all about all of the different types of SATs and all those testings. So let's talk about a kid that is struggling with what they want to, I mean, and when you're picking about what school you want to go to, in my one thing for me is I really want the parents listening to understand that it's not what this kid's going to necessarily do forever. I mean, I look at your journey. I mean, lawyer, politics, and now teaching SATs, which is what you did, I think, in order to actually help you pay for your law school.
Exactly.
Was the SATs and you went back
to that. LSAT. Yeah, it was paying, working for an LSAT prep company back then.
Yeah, and that's how this got you back into, hey, I really loved that. That was my passion, my love. I want to go back into that. And your superpower. And so it is fascinating how everything evolves. I mean, I look at myself as well in like massage therapy, personal training, getting into all of the nervous system regulation and understanding stress systems and getting into sleep and getting into traumas and getting an executive functioning. Like it's just all evolved as my life has evolved too into what I do now.
Exactly. All the pieces, all the sort of facets of our journey are helping to construct sort of who we are and where we're called to serve. That it's not linear and it only makes sense when we look back at it.
Mm-hmm.
So in picking a college, it's not about this is what I'm going to do for the rest of my life. It's not, you don't always know exactly what you're going to do. But by having an idea of some possibilities, I like to think of it as like you're building a tree and there's like this really thick branch. And as you walk out along that thick branch, you can start to see the thinner branches as it branches out. But until you start walking out along it, until you construct it, you can't see those thinner branches. So in picking a college or picking a major, we often start at the wrong place by looking at the college and looking at the major. What I like to do is I like to ask kids, and these are the deeper, more difficult, but more interesting questions. How do you want the world to be different because you lived in it? What problems do you feel called to help solve for people, for beings, for the world? Sort of what is the work you're called to do in that broad sense? And those deeper questions, you start to have an idea of what are some career paths or what are some possibilities that help equip you to do that kind of work. And by starting with that end in mind, with that wave of magic wand, what are you doing 30, 40 years from now? You say, okay, what are the experiences? What are the credentials? What are the relationships? What is the knowledge that I need to be able to make this impact effectively? And then you look at programs and schools that can give you those building blocks, those pieces. So even if you end up going a different direction, you're still building skill sets and relationships that will help you regardless of which branch you take. So you don't have to know for sure, but by having an idea of the overall sense of how do you want work to fit into your life? Is this a major part of your identity or is it just something you need to pay the bills? How important is abundance? How important is how much you make, your lifestyle? How important is work-life balance, even though the word balance is one that I have a complicated relationship with? What is the role of work in supporting your family? What is the role of work in not interfering with the other stuff you care about, your passions, your hobbies, your relationships? But it's really thinking about how you want to feel at the end of the day, and then working backwards from that emotional end state to figure out what are some potential career paths that get you there. And what are the degrees and the programs and the schools that help you get there? So part of it is looking at schools from that perspective of building for the future. And part of it is looking at schools for, okay, what is going to make the next 4 years of my life most enjoyable? Because that matters too.
It's so fascinating because I'm sitting here and I'm imagining so many parents. I know parents that I've worked with that are like burnout and all of this stuff. And they're like, oh my God, I didn't know this. Like they didn't think of, we don't, how do I say this? Go back. Okay. I'm going to go back to even us when we were talking about school and how that academic is only one piece.
Mm-hmm.
And so when we're thinking of colleges, we're only thinking of the career that we think we want. And that's only one piece because we're not thinking of the life we want.
Right.
And the life has so many different pieces, as you just said, and starting to ask those to make those career choices. I know so many parents listening to this are thinking, wow, I wish somebody had told me that when I was, you know, younger.
But also, for those parents, it's never too late.
Yeah.
It's never too late to recognize that where you are isn't where you want to be.
Yeah.
And these kinds of questions aren't just for our teens. They're also for us. Because every time we breathe, every time we blink, is a sunrise, is a new beginning, is a chance to make different decisions and to move from where we are to where we want to be. We can intentionally create the lives we want for ourselves, no matter what our before state is or where we are right now.
Yeah.
The only way nothing changes is if nothing changes.
Right. Change is, you have to be vulnerable to make change. You have to get uncomfortable to make change.
You have to be radically honest with yourself and with the people you love.
Yeah. And with that as well can come some guilt, can come shame, and we need to be able to work through those things as well, through all of those feelings.
Yes.
In order to be able to start to get out that other side.
Right. And it's about acknowledging those feelings, embracing and accepting them, but also recognizing that they do not define us.
Yeah.
We are not our feelings. We are the one that feels. Yeah. We are not our thoughts. We are the one that thinks. We are not our beliefs, we're the one that believes. So we can choose whether these beliefs, thoughts, and feelings serve us or not. And after fully experiencing them, we can invite them to pass on if they don't. We can choose to feel something different that serves us better.
Yeah, and I'm seeing that more in the generation with our kids. They are learning more of those tools and those skills and those beliefs and patterns. Whereas I know our generation and stuff too has been brought up where, you know, you stay at one job, you stay at one career, you stay in one relationship, you stay in, like, it's one of that. You pick the one and that's where you stay. And so we're breaking generational patterns.
Absolutely. In yoga, we talk about bhakti, devotion. And the idea of being devoted to something, being committed to it, has real value. And I think that's beautiful. But that's not at the expense of having bhakti and devotion to ourselves and our soul and our journey. We have to honor that with the same devotion.
Mm-hmm.
And just because a choice served us at one point doesn't mean it continues to serve us.
Yes.
We're allowed to change our minds.
Yes. And everything does happen for in our life to teach us certain lessons.
For sure.
And once we've learned those lessons at times, then, we're ready to move on to the next. And if we don't, then we're staying in that lesson. And sometimes those lessons are hard and we stay in the hard.
Yeah, and sometimes we keep repeating them with different partners or different jobs because we haven't fully learned them.
Right. Exactly. All of that. Yeah. No, it's so amazing. So, like, you're helping to break generational patterns. You're helping to stop burnout in these kids and helping them find like that joy in life and so many things that are just going in so many directions in working with them to help them pick the school and the choice of what they want for now.
Because that process done right is this playful exploration of possibilities of who might I want to be when I grow up. Not just what you want to do, but who you want to be, how you want to show up in your life and other people's lives, how you want the room to change because you walk into it. But these are the kinds of things, the deeper questions that approach the right way make this an experience more of joy and less of stress, more of get to and less of have to. And it's recognizing there are no good or bad decisions, it's just decisions. And giving yourself options. I'm a big fan of both and rather than either or. So if I have kids that are interested in two different, completely different majors, I'm like, how do we combine these? How do we get what you have your cake and eat it too? How do we get the things that you, all the things you love? And it's sort of this idea of the four circles. You've got the things you love, the things you're good at, the things that make a lot of money, and the things that make the world better. And the intersection of those four is the calling, the vocation, the path. And it's finding things that live in that space where they're in all four of those circles.
Right. And most of us, as parents that are listening to this, have been brought up with pretty much one bucket, like one circle. And we've only worked on that one circle. But when you start combining those four circles and where they do intersect in the middle, that's where like that happiness and that more balanced, because nothing is ever completely balanced, right? We're always in one circle or whatever.
I think of it less as balance and more of a dance. It's
Yes.
that sacred dance between ease and effort. And when it's something that's truly aligned, you can find the ease in the effort because it's not doing from forcing, it's doing as a natural extension of being.
Absolutely. Yeah. And yeah, the word balance has never been one that sat well with me, that I love that, a dance. I might start using that in the future. So if anybody hears me use it, it came from
Yeah,
Josh.
it's like more of a dynamic equilibrium. It's a moving back and forth.
Yeah.
It's a flow. It's not stagnant. It's not, I mean, balance, like trying to like, it's like nickeling and diming, a little bit here, a little bit there. No, that's not how souls work. It's
No.
about alignment. It's about harmony. It's not just balance.
Yes, the dance. I love that. All right, so you've got these kids and you now have you're working with them through middle school, high school, and helping them to find themselves, really start looking at the future in a very different way, in a whole way that's looking at the happiness and really what how they can make that impact on the world and how they can make
And
it
part of it,
happen.
even before we get to that point, sometimes the biggest unmet need that people have, kids and adults, is to be truly seen,
Yes.
truly understood, listened to at that deep level. So I think that's the starting point, is giving kids this experience of being taken fully seriously, of really being listened to, seen, and understood. I think it all starts from that.
Absolutely. As with everything, yeah. I feel that deep in me. It's being seen. Yeah, completely. So we work on that with the kids. Helping them feel seen, helping them understand the choices that they can make with the school that they're going into based on them really understanding more of who they are, what they want, how they can make that impact in the world in a way that allows that dance in life to give them all the different parts in life. And then they've done their SATs sometimes many, many times and they persevere and they get there and they get their SATs to where they, need them and have learned these amazing skills with you. And then
One of
they
my
go,
clients, just
yes.
quick story,
Yeah.
she took the SAT 7 times. My record for the most times taking it. And her sixth time after the sixth, before the seventh, she texts me like the night before her seventh SAT, and she's like, "Josh, do I have to take it again?" I say, "Jeannie, of course not. You don't have to do anything. It's your choice, and I'll support you whatever you decide. But if you take it again, I believe you will do better." She's like, "Fine, I'll take it one more time." So her last time, she went up another 160 points and got
Wow.
to a perfect math score. So overall, she went up 550 points from where she started. And she ended up getting a full ride, a University of Delaware honors program, biomedical engineering, kinesiology double major. She's 3 years ago, she graduated from med school at South Carolina. And now she's in her third year residency in the Myrtle Beach area. Her dream is to be an OBGYN in developing countries, so women who don't have access to good reproductive care get it. And just thinking about how far she's gone and just how refusing to take no for an answer in the world, continuing to learn, continuing to grow, keep taking it until you eliminate the careless mistakes.
Yeah, and
That's why
that's
starting early is so important, so you give folks the space to keep growing without too much pressure.
Phenomenal. And the thing is had she gotten that the first time, she would not be the person she is today.
Exactly.
And that's the thing is we are so conditioned to believe that it should happen the first time. They should get it the first time. They should
Because it's
everything.
not a test of how smart you are. It's not a test of some intrinsic quality, no matter what College Board wants us to believe. It's a measure of how good you are at taking the test, at understanding how the test works, at managing the psychological experience. And these are all skills that can grow through the right coaching and teaching.
Yeah, absolutely. So they've got the SAT, they've gotten to the school of their dreams, and then I know you had a college, like have a college program.
Yeah, well, so step between that is I do college admissions coaching. This is helping them with their applications, helping them with their essays, helping them to present who they are in a way that resonates with the schools. And it's really done right. This is a process where they get a much deeper understanding of who they are, where they're going, and why. So it's not just sort of helping them figure out where they want to go, but it's helping them get in there and helping them to sort of position themselves in a way that they show their strengths, they show their passion, and they jump off the page for the schools. So then after that, once they're in college, I do a mix of academic coaching, sort of life career coaching, path, purpose, passion coaching. At that point, it's less about sort of group programs and more about individual. So though there are some group programs sort of under development, but it's really any kid, whether they're 11, 12, or whether they're in their 30s, 40s, 50s, 60s, 70s, kids of all ages. We all have an inner teenager. And that inner teenager that wants to grow but isn't quite sure how, that needs to be seen, and just needs someone to help them learning to love themselves better so that they can grow the way they want to grow. And that's designed with each person's individual needs in mind. Everyone's path is different, everyone's journey is different. So I would encourage any parent who has a kid that needs help, whether that's someone who's struggling, or whether that's someone who's doing good but could be doing great, to reach out and explore how I can help. Because that's what I love. I love helping people experience more joy in their life, to take the things that they need to take seriously more seriously, but take the things that they take too seriously less seriously. This is supposed
Absolutely.
to be fun.
Right. And we're not taught as much that life is just supposed to be fun. I mean, as before we were recording too, I was talking about your life. I mean, you have been traveling. I mean, you've been to, Africa. Shoot, where were you just now?
So I just did a 200-hour yoga teacher training in Sri Lanka.
In
That
Sri
was
Lanka.
absolutely incredible. Yeah, then in 2020, and so then earlier this year, I did a yoga retreat in Watamu, Kenya, on the beach on the Indian Ocean, which was amazing. That was how I met Anne, who ran the yoga teacher training in Sri Lanka. But then after that, I'm like, all right, I'm in Africa. I might as well do something else because I don't want to just fly out here for just one country. So I did a 7-day safari in Tanzania. Then I stayed in Zanzibar for a while, working from a guest house on the beach. The beauty of working with folks all across the world. I've had clients in 28 states and 8 countries since COVID forced me to let my office go and go remote. I can help people from anywhere. So that has freed me to really embrace exploring the world I spent time in 14 different countries in 2024. And it's one of the most amazing, enriching things I've ever done. I think by getting out of our comfort zones, by experiencing things so far removed from our normal reality, it invites us to grow in ways that we couldn't even imagine.
I remember.
By sharing those stories with the kids I work with, I help expand their sense of what's possible in life.
I remember you talking about a dance retreat you went on in Bali, and before you were like, "Guys, I'm scared." You're like, "I've never done this before. This is so out of my comfort zone."
Yeah. If you had asked me before last May, I would have said, I don't dance. And after that retreat experience, which was amazing, I realized that I do and I always have. I just didn't know it was dance. That dancing is how I live life. That dance is not about structure or choreography. Dance is about expressing joy through movements. It's about feeling in motion. One of the workshops was called Contact Beyond Contact, and a guy named Panda Bear, who was born in San Diego but has lived a decade in Bali, a decade in India, studying dance and meditation and combining the two, said something that really stuck with me. In dance and in life, all you have to do is to drop into your body and ask yourself, what is the next most nourishing move? And do that. You don't need to know where it's leading. You just need to really trust yourself and do what nourishes you in that moment. And I've been doing that ever since.
And that's the thing is we need to first learn what even nourishes us, because we have blocked out those feelings and that those thoughts as to, like, so many people I've worked with do not know what brings them joy anymore.
Yeah, because we replace joy with cheap dopamine, things that give us immediate pleasure, but then when we don't have the pleasure, we feel pain. That's where attachment comes from. That's where suffering comes from. But that deeper joy, that state of bliss, when we're really connected and aligned and doing something that serves us not just short term but long term, that's magic.
Absolutely.
And I think the best way we can teach our kids how to do that is to do that more ourselves.
That they see it and feel it in us and are
Yes, because they learn more from our energy than they ever do from our words.
oh, huge. I can tell with my kids when the energy is off when they're around somebody because they instantly change. And I'm like, oh, and then I'll pay attention to who else is in the room. And I'm like, oh, and I'll tell them, are you feeling so and so's energy? And I'm teaching them to block that and do the difference, which is where, like, we wear gemstones. I just did an interview with who makes these gemstones
Oh,
for us
very cool.
last week, but it's been huge for us. And I have the one on my right hand to be giving love and compassion to other people.
Is that
But
rose quartz?
rose quartz with the Nebula.
Very cool.
But having like all of these has been hugely important for me and being able to keep in my own energy as well and not take on others. But our kids definitely feel our energy, feel our emotions, feel how we are. They know when we're really happy and relaxed and
For
enjoying
sure.
life, and they know when we are pushing things back and holding things in and struggling. They
I mean, I
know.
love a good algebra class, but teaching energy sovereignty is more important than teaching algebra.
It is fascinating the things that we have been conditioned, or just the things from the older generation that are slowly changing. It's things that they didn't know. So I'm not saying conditioned to believe isn't really the right way of saying it per se, but it is things that were priorities and were the main focuses in our generation growing up and the generations before us. We're starting to see that there were gaps in that, and there's things that need to be filled in, and that's just how things evolve. I mean, as a parent, we're always going to mess up. Their job as a parent is to do better than we were parented. And that does not mean our parents did a bad job.
No, everyone does the best they can with what they have, but
Always.
it's recognizing that we have more than we've ever had. We have access to more knowledge, more resources, more community, and it's up to us to take advantage of those resources to learn how to do better and be better.
Absolutely. All right, Josh, I know we could go on forever. So if there's anything else before we do tell people how they can get in touch with you and everything, before we do that, is there anything else that we have not covered here that you really feel that people need to hear or know about anything you do or anything else we've spoke of?
I think the main thing is whether it's me or someone else, whenever possible, get your kid coaching and help, quote unquote, before they need it. Don't wait until there's a crisis. Don't wait until they're so frustrated and so struggling and they're staring down the eight ball and it's almost too late. The earlier folks get in touch with me, the more I can help. Because then it's not about pressure, it's about play. It's not about stress, it's about joy. It's about, if you think about it, the top CEOs in the world, the top athletes all have coaches. Our kids deserve coaches too. And coaches that really can see them, not just as they are, but as they're capable of growing into, that can help them see what's possible and show them different ways of looking at things that give them their power back, that help them to take charge of their learning, of their experience of life, and be intentional about creating a life that's aligned to their needs. And so many kids are so beautifully and wonderfully different. I think recognizing and embracing neurodiversity is one of the most important things we can do, is to recognize that kids that think and view the world differently are our greatest strength. Because that's where new ideas come from. That's where growth as a society comes from. And letting everyone be who they are authentically and without apology is so, so, so important. And giving kids support to be who they are and to be successful as they are and not to be forced into someone else's mold. The same techniques and strategies don't work for everybody. It's about figuring out ways of approaching life, approaching learning that fit your brain and feel good. It's finding the ease and the effort and not working harder than you have to because you're swimming upstream.
Yeah, that's everything. I always say that these kids that think outside of the box are the ones that are going to change the world.
Exactly.
Kids that don't fit into society, the kids that are said they're a problem child or, you know, they're misbehaving instead of, let's find their superpowers and why their brain is working that way that's having them rebel. And
we need more misbehavior in the world.
We do, right? We need some disruption to happen and we need people to think outside the box and fight against it. That my one child that questions me on anything I know is going to change the world one day if I am able to give him the tools and skills to believe that he is such a phenomenal person and that he can do anything he wants to do and can do. And give those tools and skills, he is going to change the world. But if I do, you know, put him down for it and you know, all of that, like that's going to stuff him down and that is going to eventually cause.
Yeah. And it's really when you test a fish on how well she climbs a tree, she's going to spend her whole life thinking she's stupid. That when we test people in the wrong way and we don't give them the tools to realize that certain tests are bullshit is doing a disservice, not just to them, but to our entire world.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I think it's about giving our kids two twin gifts, the gift of success on their terms and the gift of failure. Because if they're never failing, they're not growing, they're not learning, they're not challenging themselves. So giving them safe experiences with failure so they can grow, so they can regroup and improve is so, so important as parents and as teachers.
Agreed. Absolutely agreed. Josh, this has been amazing, as I knew it would be. I know that we have totally opened the eyes of so many different parents. So how can they get in touch with you? And just so anybody listening, everything that Josh says right now will be put into the show notes. So just go to the show notes and grab the links.
So easiest way to get in touch with me probably is on social media, on Facebook, Josh Aronovich, on Instagram, at Josh the SAT guy. Or just text me, 856-341-0503. That's probably the quickest and easiest way to get a hold of me. And anyone that is part of Andy's extended family as a listener to this podcast is someone that I would just be absolutely honored to help.
Amazing. And then you also have your website.
Yes. It's aronovichcoaching.com.
Yeah. And we'll have that link down below as well.
Fantastic. All right.
Amazing. Thank you so much, Josh.
Thank you. This has been so much fun.
Always, always. I always love conversations with you. All right. I will definitely be, I always have FOMO with your social media. So I'm going to be watching your next adventure in Morocco. And I'm sure you'll have more before then. And I'm definitely going to be looking into your July retreat for adults and the monthly as well for my son, for sure.
Wonderful.
All right. Thank
Talk
you
to you
so
soon, my
much.
friend.
All right. Bye.